In celebration of Black History Month and his birth in Louisiana 125 years ago, the Smithsonian Channel will premiere a documentary entitled Legend of Leadbelly, and the Smithsonian Folkways Collection will the next day release a 5-CD box set featuring more than 100 tracks of the blues artist's work. Joining me to learn more is Jeff Place, senior archivist and curator of the Folklife Collections at the Smithsonian and producer for Smithsonian Folkways Records. Jeff, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Glad to.
How did this project come to light?
We did a project for Woody Guthrie's 100th birthday in 2012, I guess it was. It was a coffee table box set with some CDs in it. Working with Bob Centelli at the Grammy Museum, he and I started looking at other really iconic artists that we have in the Smithsonian Folklife Collections. And one of the other major figures is Leadbelly. He played everything. Leadbelly would play Hawaiian music, and he would play like Gene Autry songs, and he would play Tin Pan Alley like jazz tunes. He was like a sort of a walking sort of like top 40 band.
Primarily, the 12-string guitar, but not exclusively.
The 12-string, he picked it up, I think, because it was really loud, and he played a lot of really loud rocking kind of places down in the South, and he'd carry the music over the din.
A loud personality as well that sometimes got him in trouble and serving stints in prison.
Indeed. Well, you know, if you play these sort of juke joints and, you know, violence breaks out. And so a couple times these things led to him actually, you know, manslaughter.
And I believe it was the third stint in prison at the famed Angola State Farm where he was discovered, as it were, by the Lomaxes. Recall that time and discuss the Lomaxes, father and son.
Well, the Lomaxes are an interesting pair, John and Alan. And what John Lomax was trying to accomplish is he wanted to find pure forms of American folk music. And thought, well, maybe if I go to a prison and find some prisoner that's been like in prison for like 50 years who hasn't been contaminated by radio or hearing, I could get some kind of purer form of music that hadn't changed. So they went on this tour of the South recording African-American prisoners. And when they got to Angola, they found Leadbelly.
Leadbelly was set free, but it was during the depths of the Depression. And how could he find work at that time?
He found work actually by working for the Lomaxes. In many ways, Leadbelly was as much a folklorist and song collector as the Lomaxes. He would find songs on the trip. The most famous case was they were recording in Arkansas a group of African-American workers at a prison. And they started singing an old jingle that had been written for the Rock Island Line Railroad to advertise the Rock Island Line Railroad, you know. And he sort of heard that, went back, worked it out on his guitar, and that became one of his main songs, probably one of the ones that's lived on.
So included in this massive 108-track collection are many songs previously unreleased. How did they come to light?
What I wanted to do as part of this project, like what we did with the Woody Guthrie thing, is to create sort of the greatest collection I could possibly do of Leadbelly, overview of his entire life. So I tried to include songs from the Library of Congress stuff. And I tried to, there's all these weird little things that were like lying around the archive that never had come out before that, you know, this, I said, well, we'll sprinkle a few of those in. But the real killer thing was a couple things. One, we had a lot of the WMYC radio transcriptions off these 16-inch record transcription discs.
From when?
1941 and 2. He was on, I think, every like Sunday evening for 15 minutes or something for a couple years.
Folk Songs of America, another program by that inimitable singer of America's own songs, Hudie Leadbelly Ledbetter. How many songs do you know, Hudie?
Well, I can sing 500 songs and never go back to the first one.
My goodness, that's quite a mess.
So finding these things, I try to put all of that stuff onto this disc, too.
What's one that might come to mind now?
He did a song called If It Wasn't for Dickie, which actually, it's interesting because it really captures the process that Leadbelly used as far as like making music and creating music and writing music. The story goes, he was in Greenwich Village at like a party, and there was an old Irish man named Sam Kennedy who was singing this like song and lilting song in Gaelic. So he's like asked the guy, what is that, those lyrics about? And the guy said, well, it's about a cow. And so he sort of memorized the melody and made up his own English song about a cow called If It Wasn't for Dickie. So along come the Weavers in the early 1950s, the biggest selling acts in the country. And they took the melody and wrote a whole new set of lyrics to that song. And it became Kisses Sweeter Than Wine.
Let's give a little listen to If It Wasn't for Dickie.
If it wasn't for Dickie, I would kill you right now. But his old man, he had but one cow.
To what extent were you involved with the documentary project, and what is conveyed in that hour-long presentation?
Smithsonian has a cable TV channel, so they inquired, I guess, of, you know, of Smithsonian Folkways, what, you know, what kind of things do you have coming down the pike, you know, that might we might be able to work with. They went and hired Alan Ravenscroft. I guess he got to pick projects and, oh, Leadbelly, I'd love to do Leadbelly. So Alan popped in one day unannounced in my office, and I shared the book with him, and I've done a lot of the research over the last couple of years, finding hundreds of photographs for the book. So I shared that with him, and I was sort of a consultant on the film that way, and I actually appeared in it a couple times. The crazy bearded guy comes out of the back room.
To what extent in his day did he achieve acclaim and fame and money?
Not much of any of that. I think really the guy had some really bad timing. I think if he'd not been in prison in the 20s, and he might have been one of those classic blues guys of the 20s that people collect 78s, right? But he was in jail. He gets out in 1934, right in the middle of the worst years of the Depression. No jobs, nobody's buying records.
So he was a driver for the Lomaxes.
Right. So he does a few records, but they're trying to market him as blues, but his music was far more widespread than that. So he ends up getting this small audience in New York of like white liberals, basically, you know, the folk music crowd. The really sad thing about it is that Leadbelly dies in 1949. A year later, his most famous song, Goodnight Irene, is number one in the nation as recorded by the Weavers. He was penniless when he died. A year later, he would have been probably very wealthy and well-known.
Jeff Place, thanks so much for joining us on Blues Works Tonight.
Glad to be here.
Jeff Place is senior archivist and curator of the Folk Life Collections at Smithsonian and producer for Smithsonian Folkways Records.